Welcome to One Climbs. I am your host, Steve Reed, and if you happen to be seeing the video right now, you're going to know that something has changed. There's video. So, hey, how's it going? I've changed the format of One Climbs. Instead of the One Climbs podcast, I'm just going to be calling it One Climbs. Because it's not really, I guess, a podcast anymore. Maybe technically it is. I don't know. Semantics. But I've typically done this as an audio podcast in the past. I decided to go to video for a couple of reasons. The main reason is because I've gotten a little bit better with the video production. It's a lot easier for me to do. I actually have a little bit more of a studio now. This is also where I record another show that I do for my profession. I do one about branding, but I've always wanted to do just a version of One Climbs that was more than just the text on the website. There are so many little nuances to how we communicate that are visual that I feel like I could communicate better and more effectively if I have the video here. But I still think there's a lot of value in the audio as well. And you could still continue listening to the audio version of this show. Obviously, some things will be missed, but I think the vast majority of it you'll be able to hear. And if there is anything visual that you need to see, I'll kind of describe it a little bit. That sounds exciting, right? So let's get to the subject of what I'd like to share today. I happen to be in gospel doctrine. I don't think we have, what was it? Sunday school. Yeah, we've shuffled the names around a little bit. It's just plain old Sunday school. And we were studying the Book of Mormon, 2 Nephi 28. And somewhere in there, we were talking about miracles, right? The word miracle came up. And so I'm like, you know, I haven't really done a deep dive into what a miracle is. So started looking around, exploring it a little bit, and I came up with some interesting information. And that's a little bit about what I want to share with you today. So the first reference I have here, and I apologize about if you're looking at the screen here, maybe I should just bring this over like this. Don't judge me because of my use of tabs. I am a tab hoarder. It's just how I roll. All right. So if you're looking at my screen right now, I basically have encyclopedia.com up along with some notes here from it. And so this is kind of looking and trying to understand what the Hebrew definition of a miracle was. And so typically whenever you do a little dive into this, you always find stuff you didn't know, like all the time. And so I got a couple of different portions of this over here to the right, and I'm just going to read a couple of these. So the first portion says that biblical Hebrew has no word corresponding to the English miracle. Occasionally, the Bible mentions wonders, meaning miracles, but the meaning of wonder is much broader than miracle. And a particular class of miracles, however, can be considered as a definite biblical concept since it is designated by terms of its own. So I thought that was kind of interesting that there isn't an actual specific word that corresponds to what we would say as being miraculous, right? So it continues to say, these are the signs, extraordinary and surprising events which God brought about in order to demonstrate his power and will in particular situations when men had to be convinced. A sign can be given as proof of prophecy, right? That something was promised and that is fulfilled. And so there are these signs. And so you might think, wait a minute, doesn't a wicked and adulterous generation seek after a sign? Yeah, seeking after signs is one thing, but God can give a sign whenever he wants. And he often does, to prove a point or to show that something has been fulfilled. And so a lot of these signs are kind of pointing back to something that's already happened. Whereas sometimes I think we want to ask for a sign to prove something to us now to change our future, right? So it seems that a sign more so proves something that's already happened rather than wanting to see a sign now in order to determine what our actions are going to be moving forward. Like, show me this, then I will do that. And God doesn't seem to work that way. And in the rare cases that it does happen, it's to someone's condemnation, right? And so some biblical miracles are more than signs, i.e. their purpose goes beyond the mere proof of divine power. Israel was saved and Egypt's army was destroyed by the parting of the Red Sea. The people were given water and food in the desert by means of miraculous acts, and so on. So these interventions happened beyond just God proving that he had divine power. They were practical in nature. God had to do something in order to protect people and to preserve them, right? So the last portion here, evidently the Bible makes no distinction between signs proper and miraculous divine intervention in human history. So no distinction between those things. Kind of interesting. So this started leading me down this path to where, all right, there's kind of a different understanding of what maybe miracles are versus, I guess, what we think they are. And so the next site here is Chabad.org. What is a miracle? This is by Shamari Brownstein. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. I do not speak Hebrew, forgive me. So hopefully I'm pronouncing some of these names right. I will do my best. So my notes here say the common Hebrew word for miracle is nes. Again, not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, which translates as something that is raised up or elevated. For example, a flagpole on which a banner is raised is also called a nes. So a miracle is an elevated and elevating event. It's something extraordinary that happens where we see God's hand clearly. And this Rabbi Ashkenazi explains that what we refer to as nature is actually miraculous and, quote, unnatural. It is only because, quote, natural events happen all the time that we take them for granted, which is true. I mean, you go out in nature and you look at any little thing, like a leaf, and how it grew from just the tiniest little seed. Like all these little things just form and come together and they thrive and they flourish and they die and they have these cycles. And every now and then you get these little glimpses of just amazing things. And so we do take these things for granted. And only when something out of the ordinary happens do we think it's miraculous and unnatural. And so it continues in the words of the Talmud, the one to whom the miracle is happening does not recognize the miracle, right? Almost like we're desensitized to it. I don't know that desensitized is the right word, but we're so used to it. Extraordinary miracles wake us up to the fact that all of life, down to the minute details, is one big miracle. And I really like that. There's really good stuff in both of these. I don't know that these are two of the greatest sources ever to get this information from, but I think you can do your own study, go down the same road. You're probably going to find a lot more than what I've shared here. This is good old Webster's 1828, man. It wouldn't be a day if we didn't quote from good old Noah here. So he says, a miracle is literally a wonder or wonderful thing, but appropriately, right? And so this goes back to what we originally read about the biblical definition, a wonderful thing. So he says, in theology, an event or effect contrary to the established constitution and course of things, or deviation from the known laws of nature, a supernatural event, or what you might say appears to be supernatural. Miracles can be wrought only by almighty power, as when Christ healed lepers. Miracles can be wrought only by almighty power. I've heard people quote from time to time, and maybe there's some legitimate scripture references just not coming to my head, but miracles and wonders being performed by the adversary to deceive people. So I don't know that Noah's definition here, miracles can be wrought only by almighty power. I think righteous miracles can only be wrought by almighty power. And any wonder that the adversary does is under the jurisdiction of God himself anyway, I would suppose. That's kind of what I think we learned from the book of Job, is that Satan does have a leash on him to a degree. The things he's allowed to do and things he's not allowed to do. And so can he deceive people with his own signs and wonders? I think so, but would I call them miracles? Would I call them? I was watching that movie, what's it called? Nope, about the UFO. And one of the lines in the movie, And it's visually implied as well as this concept where they ask, is there such thing as a bad miracle? Right? It's kind of an interesting way to look at it. Anyway, you'd have to kind of watch the movie to understand the concept of that. But is there such thing as a bad miracle? I think you could refer to a bad miracle as one that's done not for the salvation and benefit of any person, but for some ulterior purpose. Then I think that could be considered, you know, a bad miracle. But typically we don't necessarily talk about things that are done in the name of evil as necessarily miracles. It's not how I'd refer to it. So let's turn to the Book of Mormon. Whenever I think of miracles, two things come to mind. These can be kind of haunting things when you think about it. So I'm going to zoom in a little bit more here. This is in Mormon 9. And listen to what's said here. Now, if you've imagined up unto yourselves a God who doth vary, and in whom there is shadow of changing, then you have imagined up unto yourselves a God who is not a God of miracles. But behold, I will show unto you a God of miracles, even the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. And it is that same God who created the heavens and the earth and all things that in them are. And the reason he's mentioning this here is the discussion is about how God is the same yesterday, today, and forever, and there's no variableness or shadow of changing, and how all these gifts of God come to us and that God is the same. And this particular phrase here, you have imagined up unto yourselves a God who is not a God of miracles. And I did a very horrible job highlighting that right there. But you've imagined up unto yourselves a God. If you just take that right there, I think, at least for me, there's this understanding of, you know, we talk about idolatry in the scriptures. What is idolatry? And I don't know that idolatry is specifically just creating a little statue and placing it somewhere and worshiping it. I mean, yes, that would probably be considered idolatry. But is also idolatry not the imagining up of something that you are recognizing as God that isn't God? Maybe some people listening to this think they've done something in their life that God can't forgive them for. Like, it's so bad. I can't see how God would forgive me. Well, you've imagined up unto yourself a God that does not forgive. That would say, yes, forgiveness for all, right? Though your sins be scarlet, they'll be as white as snow. It's possible that a person thinking that may have imagined a God that does not have the power to forgive or the desire to forgive. Or who maybe the sacrifice that Christ made, he's willing to extend it to anybody, but not you, right? I don't believe in that God. I believe in a God that forgives, in a universal atonement that covers all people. And so am I going to beat myself up for the rest of my life because there's sin in my life and that I am a sinner, just like we all are, right? No, I'm not going to, because all of that gets swallowed up in what Christ did for us. But we can imagine up a God also that is okay with us not forgiving someone. You can come up with many things. And so we can create our own versions of God, our own little private versions of God that we worship, contrary to who God really is, right? But imagining up to yourself a God who is not a God of miracles, what happens when we do that? If we flip over here to Moroni 7, I'm going to scroll up a little bit. Let's see, where did I start? And he talks a lot about basically the things that Christ has done for us and about cleaving unto all good things. And he advocateth the cause of the children of men and dwelleth eternally in the heavens. Because he has done this, because he has done the work of salvation for his children and he dwells in the heavens, have miracles ceased, right? He says, no. And he asks, if all these things are true, Has the day of miracles ceased? Have angels ceased to appear unto the children of men? Has he withheld the power of the Holy Ghost from them? Or will he? So long as time shall last, or the earth stand, or there shall be one man upon the earth, face of the earth thereof to be saved. He says, no, it's by faith that miracles are wrought, and it's by faith that angels appear. Wherefore, if these things have ceased, if miracles have ceased, woe be unto the children of men, for it is because of unbelief, and all is vain. For no man can be saved according to the words of Christ, save they shall have faith in his name, right? This is like so key right here. Wherefore, if these things have ceased, then faith has ceased also, and awful is the state of man, for they are as though there had been no redemption made. So if we don't see any miracles, is that because God changed, or is it because there's no faith, right? Because if there is faith, then miracles naturally follow. When faith is present, signs follow those that believe. So if those miracles are gone, basically we're in an awful state, because it's as if no redemption's been made, because no man can be saved, save that shall have faith. And if there is faith, then the miracles appear. If the miracles aren't there, there's no faith and no one can be saved. You're kind of doing the math here, right? This is really a powerful, important thing. And this is something that we should definitely introspectively look at. Look at our lives, look around us. Are we seeing the hand of God? Are we seeing miracles being wrought? And if we understand what a miracle is, because I think you can go, well, what is a miracle? Am I supposed to be seeing, are oceans supposed to be parting and people walking around everywhere? Like, what are the miracles we're supposed to be seeing? Well, there's a couple of them that are listed in the scriptures. Speaking in tongues, casting out devils, interpretation of tongues, healings, even people being raised from the dead. I mean, you name it, just things that only God can do. Wonders, signs that are given freely. I think when we're looking at the big picture of miracles, we see the way I would kind of summarize what maybe a miracle is just a divine intervention into the lives of people. And there have been many times that I've hoped for that intervention. There are things right now that I am hoping for intervention for. And I know that God has the capacity to do anything. But the big question becomes, should he do it? Right? That's kind of the balance. And I think that's something that takes a lot more than just casually throwing out requests. I think it's important for us to deeply ponder whether God should or should not do something that we ask. And I think we have to be very careful of what we ask of God. It's kind of like that saying, you probably shouldn't ask God to give you more patience. Otherwise, he's going to put something in your life that requires you to have patience. And maybe not something that you like, right? But that may be the only way to get it. You know, if God is looking at us like we're an olive tree or a vine that needs to bear fruit, what does the Lord of the vineyard need to do? He needs to cut the branches away, maybe the dead and dying branches or the unfruitful branches. He has to cut things away. He has to take a blade and sever portions of the plant. And that's traumatic to a living thing to have parts of it cut off, right? And so there's this trauma of God taking things away. And then there's this additional discomfort of something else being added, grafted in. A piece of another plant or something from somewhere else being grafted into you to where now this thing is part of you. Now it's in your life and you can't get rid of it. So what are you going to do? Are you going to reject it? Are you going to reject the graft? Or are you going to accept the graft and allow yourself to bear fruit through that graft? And then what God does is he fertilizes the tree by dumping a bunch of dung at the foot of it. And sometimes we can feel like we have a bunch of crap thrown right into our lives. And yeah, we can either sit there and go, wow, this really stinks, or we could absorb that into our roots and allow it to nourish us. And so a very wise God, he's doing all of these things. He does intervene in the life of the plants of his garden, which are all of us. But sometimes we don't like his interventions. We don't understand his interventions. And sometimes we may say, Lord, I'm begging you, help me bear more fruit. And so the Lord goes, are you sure? And we say, yes, whatever it takes. I want the fruit. Give it to me. Okay. And then here he comes, cutting, grafting, dung. And you're like, whoa, I asked for fruit. I didn't ask to be traumatized and things thrust into my life that I didn't want and all this crap dunked at my feet. But then if we're patient and we're wise, we'll realize that that's the only way you're going to get the fruit. But I can testify in my own experience, my own direct experience, that God is a God of miracles. Absolutely. And as many people who want to argue against that, and as many times where I questioned it on my own, I have literally seen miracles. Even the miracles that were described in like the New Testament that Jesus did, I have seen many of those things happen in reality. Healings, the gift of tongues. And I'm not just talking about people learning different language and missions. I have literally seen someone be taught in English who did not understand English, who understood it. And within days, they were speaking English and they continued to grow. I've never seen anything like it before. I have seen people healed. I have been healed multiple times. Sometimes, yes, over the course of a few days, many times, boom, instantaneously, in the moment that the words were said and that it was requested. Sometimes by blessings, sometimes directly. I have seen people snatch back from death. I mean, I could go on and on. I've seen some crazy stuff, man. And if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes or experienced it or been immersed in it, I honestly couldn't tell you if I would have believed it, right? I know that can sound kind of cliche to say, but it's true. We can have God's intervention in our lives, right? And not for like goofy stunts, but for real important things. And the most important critical intervention, the most miraculous thing that could ever happen in your life is your own personal redemption. That will happen through a direct intervention with God. And that promise is open to everyone. It's an invitation to come and receive it, no matter where you are. And if you feel like in your life, you have never received God's redemption and you question where you stand with God, then what are you waiting for, right? It's there to go and receive. And I've received that for myself, and it is my personal witness that it's true. This is one of my favorite topics, is the whole idea of redemption. And I think it's the greatest miracle that God has ever done. And the greatest thing about it is that it's something that all of us can experience personally. We're all not going to experience what happened with the plagues in Egypt and all those wonders and things, amazing things that we look back in history and man, that would have been really cool to see the Red Sea part. What was that like? Is it as cool as it's depicted in the movies, or was it still pretty impressive? I mean, I don't know what did it look like, but the one thing that we can all have is the power of God's redemption. I just think that's so cool. But anyway, appreciate you joining me for this episode of One Climbs. Thanks for hanging around. Look forward to talking to you the next time. I got a lot of things I'm thinking about doing in future episodes. Guests that I want to have on, and I think video is a great format to have guests. But anyway, see you next time.